With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd, and this is the Chuck Todd Cast. My guest today is the center for the Boston Celtics, Enes Kanter Freedom. He was born Enes Kanter in Turkey, and in 2009 moved to the United States, where he began his career, eventually playing for the Utah Jazz, the Oklahoma City Thunder, New York Knicks, and Portland Trailblazers. He's an outspoken critic of Turkey's president, Erdogan, criticism that has led to retaliation against his family and the cancellation of his Turkish passport. In November 2021, Kanter became a U.S. citizen and changed his name to Enes Kanter Freedom. In a league known for taking a stand on social justice issues, Kanter Freedom has stood out for his attacks on China, his support for Taiwan and the Uyghurs, and his feuds with some fellow players over the issue. He's called for the Beijing Winter Olympics to be moved out of China, and he's called Chinese leader Xi Jinping a brutal dictator. Enes, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
You speak with some tremendous moral clarity, and I want to begin because one of the examples I like to send to people about watching a democracy fade away is I like to point to Turkey and Venezuela, because you had two democratically elected leaders who, once they stayed in power, figured out how to erode the democracy. You grew up with this. Mm-hmm. You saw this firsthand. I remember when Barack Obama came into office, he was going to make Erdogan a partner, you know, in creating a more small-D democratic Middle East. And boy, did it erode. Paint a picture of that, of what you saw, what you experienced a little bit.
In Turkey, well, let me just tell you this. Obviously, when I grew up in Turkey, you know, Turkey was having some issues, but still, you know, it was a democratic country. You have freedom of press, freedom of religion, and freedom of speech. And, you know, people were happy. Like I said, again, there were problems that were happening, but Turkey was going to the right direction. And then after that, obviously, when Erdogan took over, first, it all started with, you know, corruption scandal back in 2013. Erdogan and his family was involved in it, and that's where it all began, you know, because after that, Erdogan started putting, you know, people in jail, prosecutors, you know, police and judges and all that stuff, and media members of, you know, journalists and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, you know,
How fast did it feel? Like, oh. I mean, look, I was in Istanbul in 2010, and it just felt like a city that was just bursting, you know, with yes. enthusiasm, with global pride. Right. This was a 21st century city. This was a country that didn't want to, and it just seemed to collapse so fast.
It actually happened in like, I was in America, but I'm just saying it happened so quick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, once it all started, I was like, Erdogan was going around and shutting down media outlets and stuff. I was like, I don't care who you are. If you're going to fight against media and free press, I'm going to say something about it. You know, that was the first on my mind, actually, because he was abusing journalists' rights. He was putting journalists in jail, whoever was talking about this, you know, corruption scandal. And that was actually for the first time I said something. It became viral because of the NBA platform and stuff. And, you know, one thing I want to say, because Turkey could have been a bridge of Islam and West, but just because of all this stuff happening right now is impossible. You know, you see, Turkey actually, I found out with the numbers, one of the, you know, I believe, top three countries in the world that put the most journalists in jail. I couldn't believe it. Right after Russia and, I believe, China.
Right. And it was supposed to be, I mean, it just feels like if Turkey's on the side of democracy, it's an important part of the world for Turkey to be on the right side there. So compare to, you know, we have this argument inside this country now, you know, the state of our democracy. So what you see today, do you see anything like, you know, is there anything to compare with Turkey, or should we tap the brakes here in our fears?
I actually, like a lot of my teammates actually was asking me this question.
Yeah.
And they asked me because they know, because of me, they know the situation that happened in Turkey. And they asked me, like, do you see any kind of, you know, similarities? And I say, yes, I do see a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. You see what's happening in America right now, January 6th, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, all the, you know, attacks happen towards, you know, black community and towards brutality. And then I can just go on and on. But I think, you know, every time I turn on the news, this was happening in Turkey. One side is attacking another side, another side is attacking another side. And I feel like the main goal should be, how can we make this country better together, you know? And right. I believe it just breaks my heart, because all these people, they're just trying to gain, you know, I guess, you know, clouts or retweets or, you know, fame from hating on each other. And that is just unacceptable, because that was what's happened in Turkey back in 2012 and 13. And after that, the economy started to go down, and Turkey having there a lot of terrorist attacks and all that stuff. But it does break my heart seeing, because America is like a role model for all the many of the countries out there in the world, you know, because of this democracy.
Do you fear we're going to lose that? I mean, you know, I always hear from first generation immigrants or people that are aspiring to be citizens. Mm-hmm. They'll be like, there's nothing like America. Yeah. And yet, I think those of us here are going, boy, I hope we're still that role model, but sometimes I don't feel like we are.
That's a good question. I don't know, actually, because it kind of sound like, yes, I'm just scared of that America's going to lose that credibility, because all this country, and many other countries in Middle East and all that, looks America as this like role model, democracy, freedom. But now all this like, things are happening recently in America, it's definitely shifted from that way.
You know, speaking out comes with a price, and you've paid a really heavy price. And I'd like people that maybe don't know your story here a little bit. You wrote a very eloquent piece in The Atlantic describing this, but you've lost your family.
Yeah.
You've lost contact with them. They've been harassed. I think your brother's been in prison. Your father was forced to probably write some propaganda to you. Any hope of being able to reunite with them, you think?
I remember it was back in 2015. So I go to Turkey. I used to go to Turkey every summer and celebrate my birthday with my family. And then right after, the next day, I come back to America and start getting ready for the season. I remember I did 2015, I celebrated my birthday with my family. The next day I was going to come to America, and I was sitting down at a dinner table and I was having a conversation with my mom and dad. And I asked them, like, listen, do you support me no matter what? And they asked me, what do you mean? I was like, well, I'm going to talk about some of the issues that are happening in our country, and that is going to affect me and you guys. Just because of the things I talk about, you guys might put in, you know, jails. You guys not going to be able to walk in the street freely. You guys going to get harassed and all that stuff. You guys might get fired from your job. And I was like, do you support me? And I looked at my mom. My mom was like, you know, if you're standing up for what's right, we got your back no matter what. I looked at my dad. My dad didn't say anything, because he wanted me to be just this legendary basketball come out from Turkey and, you know, make a name for himself in NBA and, you know, play for a national team. And then I left. And after that, the things got very heated, and my dad got fired. My sister went to medical school for 6 years. She still cannot find a job. My brother was playing basketball. He got kicked on every team. And the things were getting so bad, they had to put a statement out there and saying, we are disowning our son. And Turkish government didn't believe that. They sent police to my house in Turkey, and they raided the whole house, and they took every electronics away because they wanted to see if I am still in contact with my family or not. They couldn't see no evidence, but they still took my dad in jail for a while. But we put so much pressure from here to Turkey, they let him go. But that was the last time I saw them. Last time I talked to them, I can't even remember. But, you know, many of the time my teammates are asking me, like, are you crazy? I get that question a lot. Are you crazy? They're telling me, like, you know, your family's still back in there.
Yeah. You know,
they could be in danger and stuff. But I tell them, it's like, listen, my family's the only one. There are so many families out there. Their situation is way worse than mine. So many journalists and political prison.
Yeah.
I have to stand up. I have to stand up for those people.
But Anas, it isn't easy. And I understand that people that don't, they want to, but they feel like they can't, right? You know, like I said, you have this moral clarity and you have this spine about you. But I'm sure you know people that want to speak out and they're afraid. What do you tell them?
For sure. I mean, I see, first of all, there are so many athletes out, not just athletes, but celebrities, people who have platforms, singers, rappers, actors. They know what's going on. They see the problem, but just because of, you know, contracts, endorsement deals, TV deals, this and that, they're scared to say a word. And we are witnessing the same thing in America right now towards China, you know?
Particularly in the business community. Exactly. You see it. That's where you see it the most.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, more often, I sit down with my NBA captains and talk about these issues, right? Yeah. And they're like, listen, what you're saying is right. You're not telling the wrong thing, but don't expect us to join you, you know, because there's so much money's involved, so much business involved. If I say this, then I won't get another contract or I won't get another endorsement deals. And I don't want to say that to their face. I was like, you literally choosing money over morals, principles, right, and values, because obviously they're an MBA and I just don't want to break their heart. But that's pretty much it, you know? I mean, to me, I never, my whole life, I remember, you know, when I was 9 years old, my mom told me that, you know, stand up for people, you know, stand up for innocent people, even if it means sacrificing everything. There was like a bullying happened in school and I was like standing up for my friend and stuff. And that's what my mom told me. I was like, I promised her. I was like, from now on, my whole life, I'm going to stand up for the right things and for innocent people. And that's what I'm trying to do now.
Do you think you got into a little high-profile exchange with LeBron James? Do you think he knows your story? Does he know your story?
For sure he does. There's okay. No way he doesn't, you know.
Because I could sit here. It's like if somebody does – if they know your story, you would hope it would be like, I understand where you're coming from. You know, and let me explain. You know, that's the part of this. If you know your story, it's hard for me to criticize your moral clarity.
Like 100% he does. 100%, because I mean, there's no way he doesn't, or there is no way any player at an NBA that doesn't know my story, you know? So
it was pretty high profile for a while when the NBA was asking the government to help. I totally recall. Have you had a private conversation with him? Because nothing ever gets accomplished on social media. I think we know that.
Not with LeBron, but Adam Silver, yes, I did.
Oh, you did?
I did. You know, all these things were happening. So I remember first time it was in end of October, I believe, you know, I wore a free Tibet shoes and went out there in a game and played a game with the Tibet shoes. I was getting so, I mean, two of the NBA officials came to me and told me to take your shoes off.
NBA officials, like the referees, or were there other officials in the game?
Who works for the NBA. Actually,
work for the NBA.
And I saw an article that they asked, then one of the NBA, someone who works for the NBA, I think it was like a spokesperson, whatever, about this story, and they said it is not true. I just don't want to give any names because I know the moment that I give names, they can get fired. So anyway,
I get it.
That's not the important thing, but like two of the NBA officials, I remember, right after the national anthem came to me and said, please take your shoes off. I'm like, excuse me, why? And they're like, because before I put those shoes on, I read the whole, you know, the rule book and see if I'm allowed to wear this or not. They said there's no rule against it. So anyway, I went out there and they told me, we are begging you to take those shoes. I was like, listen, if I'm breaking any rules, let me know. I'll be the first one to follow the rules.
Sure.
And they're like, I told them, I was like, listen, even if I get fined, I don't care. I'm not going to take those shoes off. And they told me, we are not talking about a fine, buddy. We're talking about getting banned. I was like, that game was right before I was getting ready for my citizenship test. And I was looking at, like, I was trying to remember all the amendments, you know?
Right.
I'm like, my First Amendment is my freedom of speech.
Right.
So I was like, you're literally taking that away from me. I was like, there's no way I'm taking those shoes off. Go tell your boss. And then after that game, you know, the play, not NBA, but the Player Association. So we have NBA and we have NBPA, the Player Association.
Right.
Yep. Was called me and my manager maybe once every like 3-4 hours. He's like, listen, please, we are getting so much pressure from the NBA. Don't wear their shoes again. I'm like, listen, I'm not breaking any rules. So they were just keep harassing us like every day. I'm like, you know what? I am done talking to y'all. I'm just going to have a conversation with Adam Silver, you know?
Because so what was he? I mean, everything I hear about him, I've spent some time with him. He is – everything I hear and what I, is my impression is he's somebody who listens. He's empathetic, but he's also running a business, right? So how was that conversation?
That is – no, that is true. Obviously, he does run a business. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I know what's going on in the business. Like, you know, like just last year, there are – more people watch NBA in China than American population. Over like 400 million. It's something crazy. And right. I understand there are billions of dollars involved. I understand all of that. But, you know, I remember when I sit down and then with Adam Silver and had a conversation, I told Adam, I was like, listen, Adam, first of all, am I breaking any rules by wearing the shoes? Yes or no? Don't just yes or no. He said, yeah. No, you're not breaking any rules. I said, okay. And I wanted to ask him a question. That because it really bothered me when I wear those shoes. The first half ended, I went to my locker room, I checked my phone, and my manager texted me and said, all Celtics games in China are banned. I was wow. like, whoa, you know? And I even like told my manager right at that moment, well, I was like, well, that shows one more time, it's a dictatorship, you know? So I told I asked Adam, I was like, Adam, what do you think about...
But I'm guessing you're not flinching. You've had a country, an authoritarian, take your family away from you.
Exactly.
So the idea that they can't watch you play basketball, you're like, well, that's too bad. But I'm guessing that, you know, I'm sorry. How about losing contact with your family exactly. and then come talk to me?
So yeah. I asked Adam, I was like, Adam, what do you think about China banning our Celtics game and, you know, television? He was like, oh, that's not true. I'm like, Adam, there's a State Department report out there. I can mm-hmm. send you the report saying that it's a shame that Chinese government banned because mm-hmm. a player, they didn't give my name, a player talking about what's going on over there in China, whatever. He's like, well, you know, it's complicated, blah, blah. I'm like, Adam, listen, you know, what I'm trying to do is to stand up for innocent people out there. I'm not doing anything wrong. I understand it's a you know, business involved, mm-hmm. but I want people to listen to this, you know, podcast as well. If your mom, if your sister, your daughter, or your whoever, your father was in the concentration camp and getting tortured and raped every day, would you still think about the business side of the business side of this? You know, mm-hmm. if because I sit down and have a conversation with the survivors, so I listen to the story from firsthand. What's going on over there? Yeah. What they're going through.
Have you met with some Uyghurs who have survived?
Yes, when I was in the DC, I mm-hmm. sit down and had a conversation with some of the survivors, and they were the one telling me that how horrible the situation is. It's pretty much a genocide, how are getting tortured and rape and sterilization and abortion. I was like, I don't care how much money is involved, man. I have to stand up for those people because it will go everything I ever stand against, you know? And mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, someone called me out. That's the reason I'm talking about all this issue. I remember doing a basketball camp this summer with Hakeem Jeffries in Brooklyn. And
yeah.
I remember sitting down and taking a picture with the kids, and one of the parents, right, turned around and called me out in front of everybody and said, how can you call yourself a human rights activist when your Muslim brothers and sisters are getting tortured and raped in concentration camps in China, and you're mm-hmm. still, you know, blindly talking about Turkey? I froze. I was like, whoa. And I turned around to that parent. I was like, I promise you I'm going to get back to you. That day, I canceled everything. I went back to my hotel and started researching. Then mm-hmm. I learned about Tibet, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Uyghurs, Mongolians, and all this, you know, right abuse sure. done by China.
So, as you know, one of the refrains about 5 years ago and a lot of times would be, shut up and dribble. Mm-hmm. And when you know all of your story, That's what the Turkish government was trying to make you do. Mm-hmm. Shut up and dribble. The Chinese are trying to make everybody shut up and dribble. What do you say to anybody that says shut up and dribble now?
First of all, I mean, these governments, these authoritarian regimes try to buy silence. you know, just because of the money, with endorsements, with contracts, blah, blah, whatever, they are trying to buy silence. But I think one thing I will say to those people, you know, it's whatever you're talking about is bigger than money and bigger than basketball or bigger than sports, because whatever you talk about, is it affects people's lives and it touches hearts. And, you know, and someone had to do it. You see, all these people are staying silent. People like, I don't know, like John Cena, or LeBron James, or Joe, or anyone, like anyone who has a platform are scared to say a word, because obviously they are trying not to hurt their reputation in China because of, you know, all this business and money involved and stuff. But I would just say, you know, be brave, man. You know, when you're done with this basketball, I feel like this platform is given you by God. So we're just going out and trying to do the God's work.
Yeah. On the Olympics, I think this is a tough decision for a lot of Olympic athletes, right? Mm-hmm. They want to compete. They didn't choose China as the host, right? This International Olympic Committee, which is very corrupt.
Very.
We know this. The Olympics have been used by authoritarians to whitewash, mm-hmm. right, their reputation. See Putin just recently in 2014 and what Beijing did in 2008, mm-hmm. what they're trying to do now. But what do you say to that athlete that says, Ennis, I'm with you there in spirit, but, you know, there's no professional speed skating. I've been working my whole life for this. I want to fight for the gold.
I will just say this first. You know, the Chinese Communist Party does not represent the Olympic core values of excellence, of respect, of friendship. They are a brutal dictatorship. And, you know, they engage in censorship. They threaten freedoms. They don't respect human rights. And while we're talking, there's a genocide happening right now. And one thing about the International Olympic Committee, they sleep in the same bed with China. They're very, very corrupt. I will just tell this to the athletes, you know, all the gold medals in the world that you can win is not more important than your, you know, your morals and values and principles. I understand you work so hard for your whole life to maybe get to this point, but, you know, in the other side, there's, you know, people are losing their lives and losing their loved ones, losing their homes and stuff. So, mm-hmm. and to me, you see diplomatic boycott. It is good, right. But it's not enough. You know, I understand politicians, whatever it is.
Well, the experience, I will say this, and I remember, and I'm a little bit older than you, 1980, there's this perception that it didn't work. Mm-hmm. Now, I could argue the Soviet Union fell in 87. Maybe it did. You know, from what you under, you know, what do you make of that argument that says, well, in 1980, that boycott didn't work the way we thought it would?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, also, like, I'm trying to tell all these athletes, I'm having a conversation with these athletes. I'm like, do you really feel safe? Look what they did to their own tennis
player. Well, Ennis, that's a whole nother story. I certainly wouldn't be comfortable being in China right now, especially during COVID. And they could use COVID restrictions to keep people there for weeks.
And I'm like, look what they've done to their own tennis player. You know, are we really going to feel comfortable of, you know, sending our players at this to this country where there's a genocide happening, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, people are, you know, forget about Peng Shuai, but like we know she's alive, but we don't know if she's free to speak to.
Yeah, we don't know what's happened to her family.
Exactly. So like, do you really feel comfortable?
Yeah. And you know, firsthand on what they can do to you. Let me close with this. If you could get a half an hour with President Biden, mm-hmm. I want to go back to Turkey because this is both personal for you. Mm-hmm. But look, I think when you think about global instability and potential global stability, a small D democratic Turkey goes a long way to get there. How should the United States treat Turkey these days?
First, you know, when Biden took the office, people were very hopeful. People were mm-hmm. very happy because he was keep talking about how he is going to make human rights a priority, how he's going to handle, you know, this dictators in Middle East and, you know, keep them accountable. But now you see nothing. You know, it's been how many, you know, months, years now, there's nothing happened. Erdogan's still doing what he's doing. He's still, you know, putting people in jail, innocents in jail. The country is going worse and worse every day. The economically, I believe it's like the worst in Turkey history or something.
Right.
But if I sit down with one 30 minutes, you know, and anywhere with Biden and have a conversation, I will just tell him, just promise and just do what you promised. And it's a shame because I want to actually tell you this because it really broke my heart. I'm not going to give his name because that senator actually is like one of my best friend. I remember we are sitting down in a Senate and having lunch with this senator. And I asked him, I was like, how come? So I asked him first, does Biden know President Biden know my story? He's like, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so we've been trying to meet with White House and himself for how many months now? How come he's not meeting with us? He's like, this is exactly what he said, because he is afraid. I'm like, excuse me, what do you mean he's afraid? He's like, well, Turkey is a NATO ally. And they don't want to go to war. America doesn't want to go to war with Turkey. So that's why they are afraid to meet with you, because if Biden meets you, that means it's a screw you to Erdogan. And he's scared. So I was like, you're telling me, Senator, the most powerful man and the most powerful house in the world are scared to meet with an NBA player? He's like, unfortunately, yes. At that point, I was like, this is crazy. I don't know what to say. I lost my words.
Well, you didn't lose your words for this. Thanks for the time, Anas. It's good to meet you this way virtually. Next time you're in D.C., I hope we can spend a little time together.
Sure. Thank you, brother.
All right. You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Eat the Press. Today's episode was produced by Justice Gilpin Green and Matt Rivera. John Reese is our executive producer, and our theme music composed by Spoke Media. You can catch Meet the Press daily on MSNBC every day at 1 p.m. Eastern. Meet the Press Reports is on demand on Peacock. And the big show is available every Sunday morning on any platform you want, including your local NBC station. So thanks for listening, and until we upload again.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.